his negotiating strategies is, I'm a mad bastard.
I mean, considering the way waiting lists are in this country, I'm just glad to hear anyone get an operation.
Yeah, I mean, he was originally supposed to go into Crumlin at the Children's Hospital, but finally got there.
You are a complete dickhead.
We don't want them listening to our podcast. Yeah, stop, unsubscribe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Few Scoops. My name is Aoife Moore. I am a journalist and author and still recovering from a pretty hectic hen do in France over the weekend. And my co-host, I've just found out, can't really swim. It's Colm O'Regan.
Yes, well, that's, I do other things as well too by not swimming. But yeah, I am I'm going to learn one day.
This week we have Trump's tariffs with the EU and the art of the deal. We have a horrendous murder of a mother and her children in County Fermanagh. A heroic woman in Tala who stood up against a racist hate crime, and what you can do if you see one too. Another ridiculous instance of Ireland not preserving its history after a student accommodation block is proposed in an old Magdalen laundry. Danny Healy-Ray gets shoved by a Gardaí. Kerry won the All-Ireland. And we have a famous Irish surfer. So let's get into it. The art of the deal remains certain. Donald Trump has now confirmed one of the largest trade deals in world history. The new EU and US trade deal was confirmed on Sunday in a meeting in Scotland, where I'm sure coincidentally Donald Trump's golf course is.
Yep.
Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, agreed with Donald Trump that they have a new US tariff on all EU goods of 15%. This by no stretch is a good deal. No. You know, Micheál Martin, Neil Richmond, the Minister of State for Foreign Affairs, everyone has said no one is overly happy about this, but it has avoided a trade war. The way Neil Richmond described it was the least bad option. He said we're not exactly celebrating, but they were looking at a 30% tariff. So what this means for people is that in the long run, US consumers are a big loser here, because what they will see is an increased cost of living and hiked prices on EU goods. Trump wants things made in America.
Yeah.
He wants less globalism, less trade, and he wants US consumers to buy things that are made in America. That's why he's increasing all these tariffs.
He thinks, though, that a car made in America is just going to be cheaper because it's made in America just down the road. But it's made of loads of things
that are very expensive
everywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
Semiconductors, all that kind of thing. And I guess he's hoping that by the time people realize they've been sold a pup and are paying more for their European stuff, and it hasn't been replaced by local American stuff because the local American stuff
would
be expensive as well. Yeah. People will have forgotten, because his supporters forget lots of things. They'll have forgotten who signed the trade deal, or they'll have forgotten. He can blame somebody else. And yeah, it's kind of bad for everybody in various time frames, except Trump, who gets to do his handshake and say stuff and keep a promise in inverted commas.
Yeah, so in the interim, what we're going to see now is, although there is a lot less confusion, there still is confusion. So for us here in Ireland, we are still incredibly in the dark, because Ireland is actually the biggest EU exporter to America. So our biggest ones will be things like pharmaceuticals and spirits. So like the whiskey industry, and
which are sometimes the same thing, depending on your philosophy exactly. around whiskey.
So as of today on Tuesday morning, there is still confusion about what is actually covered by this 15%. Pharmaceuticals, which are a huge part of the Irish economy, could actually be hit with a higher levy. This is the same for dairy products, which that'll be things like Kerrygold butter, which is extremely popular now in America. Kourtney Kardashian.
That's dairy products as opposed to dairy products.
A dairy product like me.
Yeah.
This is more a dairy product like a cow. Although some people would probably say,
what's your tariff?
What's
the percentage?
I actually don't think I would get into America at this stage. But we still don't know. However, it's not good. This level of confusion is not good for anyone. And we have heard from people like IBEC, who have said, you know, this is basically a surrender to Donald Trump. The Prime Minister of France is not happy. There are a lot of kind of differing interests across Europe, and it has divided Europe. And also added to this, the President, Ursula von der Leyen, who made the deal, is very unpopular.
It's something that we probably forget in Ireland, that the EU is made up of all these different governments. And I think we're not quite clear on why there's a President of Europe negotiating on our behalf. Like, it's part of what being part of the EU is. And it's presumably one of the reasons why Brexit happened as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in theory, she should have been far stronger, because this is a huge economy here.
She's got a 27-country block.
27-country block. But it very much looks like, just kind of reading the reaction of some EU heads, the Germans are saying, oh, it's grand.
Yeah, because their car manufacturer kind of like, is fine.
Yeah, the French are like, you sent Dougal to do a funeral? No, like, like, how did she come back with that deal?
Yeah.
And this is the thing, like, the reason the EU, I think, is weak in this is that their appetite for chaos is lower than Trump's. So Trump has the luxury of being a leader of a cult / Republican Party and can do mad shit and bad things can happen from it. And he is not under the same pressure to have less chaos than the EU. So one of his, you know, one of his negotiating strategies is, I'm a mad bastard. And you're not. And I know what you're going to do because you're a reasonable person and you're going to be worried about differing views.
So the way I would see it is every other politician in the world, except maybe for like Putin and Netanyahu, every other politician in the world has to deal with some set of consequences.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, Benjamin Netanyahu don't deal with any consequences for their actions. It's like, as you would probably relate to, it's like negotiating with a toddler.
Yeah.
Because like Trump's like, I'm just going to do whatever I want and I'm going to change the rules when it doesn't suit me.
It's the toddler in the restaurant
who
will still be brought home and hugged no matter what they do. And we're just, the EU is basically just worried about the other diners. And the next time they go into the restaurant, whereas a toddler is like, there are other restaurants. I don't give a shit. And I'm going to literally give a shit right now.
Yeah.
So it's, you're fundamentally at a disadvantage when negotiating with a mad king.
Yeah. And Ibeck, I believe, said this morning as well, you know, people are talking about, well, we have some certainty. And Mr. McCoy said, well, not really, because this is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Because how much certainty can you have?
It's like negotiating with Putin. You let him away with Georgia. He does the next thing, you know. So the answer always is to stand up. But it's the appetite for chaos. They don't want the uncertainty over the summer. So you can't blame them in some ways. I think, you know, there's lots of different views on whether this is a good deal or bad deal. If you're just looking at body language, there's a photograph of the negotiating teams after the deal has been signed. And if body language is your thing, this photograph, I'm going to show you, Aoife, and you can look at it at home if you look up the name Sabine Weyand. She's the Director General for Trade. So she negotiated Brexit, right?
The little lady in the grey coat?
Yes. She told the British where to go during the exit agreement for Brexit. Look at her reaction to this. Look at everyone around her. Look at all the shit-eating grins.
All their thumbs up.
Thumbs up around her. She is there looking a bit like Dr. Evil's henchwoman.
She's quite like Edna Mode from The Incredibles.
Yes, exactly. And she's not happy. She does not look
happy. Her hands are clasped. Actually, the two women actually on that side, the only other two women in the picture, apart from Ursula von der Leyen, are not giving thumbs up, don't have shit-eating grins, because these women know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And Ursula von der Leyen has only one thumbs up. And the other hand looks as if it's like trying to wrestle with her conscience. And it's illuminating.
Yeah, I think as well, the EU, having come out of Brexit, probably just can't be arsed negotiating with assholes anymore. And having negotiated with Boris Johnson for quite some time, I think all the air's gone out of the tires. And with the war in Ukraine going on their borders as well, I think Trump, it's loath to give him a compliment, but Trump knows all this.
Yeah.
I think for Irish people, the most important things we need to know are, we probably won't see price increases right this second, but they probably will come down the line. And the ESRI forecast for job losses are around 35 to 40,000 job losses. We've been through worse before. That should never be a marker that we're measuring ourselves against. This is devastating for individual families. We've been through recessions and crashes before, and we see how these types of job losses affect people. The only thing we can say is there are a wee bit more certainty now, but job losses are coming, notwithstanding the war in Ukraine hasn't ended either. There's a lot of instability.
And the most immediate thing is, are the government being asked to look at the budget again, are they? Is that
they've been asked to look at their summer economic statement again. They only released it last week. And they said they don't have to look at it again because it's just a policy statement. However, Keane O'Callaghan from the Social Democrats pointed out that it was only last week and they could probably look back at it. But they're also on their summer holidays and I don't see much appetite for it. So they said they're not going to do it. But we'll keep an eye on it, especially when it comes to job losses and stuff. And if anyone has anything they'd like to contribute and how they've been affected, do get in touch with us. So trigger warning for this story. This is incredibly distressing, but we felt it was too big a story not to include. So the only suspect in the murder of a Fermanagh mother and her two children has died this morning in hospital. Ian Rutledge died in Belfast as a result of self-inflicted gun wounds after it is suspected he murdered his wife, Vanessa, and their two children, James, who was 14, and Sarah, who was 13. Vanessa and Sarah were found dead in Maguire's Bridge in Fermanagh last Wednesday morning. James was taken to the hospital in Enniskillen, but he died from injuries later that day. Ian Rutledge had been brain dead. It's assumed that he murdered his family and then turned the gun on himself and then died at the early start of this week. Sources in the locality said that he was experiencing depression due to his vision deteriorating with an underlying illness. He was losing his sight, and this, according to locals, meant that he gave up his job as a lorry driver and he was working alongside his father. Now, himself and Vanessa had broken up several years earlier and there had been challenges within the marriage. I don't care. I don't care that this man had depression and he was losing his sight. There are hundreds of, if not thousands of people who have, millions of people who have depression, thousands of people who have lost their sight. And this is not a story, although this man was clearly mentally ill and was so mentally ill that he wanted to take his own life. That wasn't enough. But take the lives of innocent women and children.
Could I ask, should newspapers even mention that? Like, is it relevant at any stage, but even at this stage, like when things like this happen that are so awful and incomprehensible that we maybe naturally reach out for some sort of box to place it into, maybe it's protecting ourselves because we don't want bad stuff to randomly happen.
The reason they're written this way is because people want to believe that the type of man Ian Rutledge was who murdered his whole family, that he's a monster, and he's not. He's a very ordinary man, and it is the ordinariness of domestic violence and femicide that is so terrifying. We know how much it happens, and if we are to write about people's mental health when it comes to family annihilation, we should also then be writing about it in terms of violent offences against strangers, drug offences, terrorism. And the fact is we don't.
Yeah.
It is when mostly white men murder their families or murder their wives, then we talk about their mental health and their deteriorating eyesight or whatever issues. And I can imagine losing your eyesight is life-altering. It is terrifying. That is still no excuse to murder your entire family, to take children's lives and your wife's life. And it's against the backdrop, we know, of that the North being the most dangerous place in Europe to be a woman. This woman, Vanessa, was originally from County Clare. She'd obviously moved to Fermanagh with her two children. And that's now two communities that have been completely destroyed by grief. And we will go on both sides of this border, we will go on like domestic violence has no root cause and no cure. And we know that it does. We know, you know, increased welfare, better childcare, better mental health services, more refuge beds, more women in leadership. We know all these things decrease to a point domestic violence. We've seen it in our European countries. But none of that really has taken on here. We've seen it after, you know, murder after murder of women, north and south.
But we as voters, citizens, neighbours, friends have the biggest strength is our numbers.
Mm.
So we should be bringing it up with our politicians.
Mm-hmm.
And we're often witnesses to the very early stages of something that culminates in this, maybe in where we see people being distant,
mm.
and it could be due to coercive control. What, as individuals, as members of a community, we have a role, don't we?
Yeah. If you are worried about someone, you can contact Women's Aid. It doesn't have to be you that is in immediate danger. If you think someone in your family or one of your friends is in a coercive control relationship, they have advice for how to help people. It is incredibly tough when someone you love, you think is being hurt and can't get themselves out. But there are ways and means as an individual to help out your friend and family member. And as a voter, this needs to be something. If there was any other person who was being picked off in the way that women are being murdered in this country, in the north, what, 27 women since 2020. If there was someone going around picking off people of a certain religion or a certain race, there would be huge money thrown at this problem. But because it's women, and because society seems to think that there's nothing we can do about it, then nothing seems to change. And now Vanessa and her two children are dead for no reason other than a selfish man didn't want them to be alive anymore, but didn't want them to live without him. And I can't imagine what their families are going through. It is absolutely horrendous. There was a vigil for Vanessa, Sarah and James in Armagh on Monday evening, and there was a similar one took place in Barefield in County Clare, where Vanessa was originally from. If you find yourself in a violent situation at home, you can phone Women's Aid 24-hour National Free Helpline. It's 1-800-341-900. That's 1-800-341-900.
And Men's Aid are mensaid.ie. You can find out more there. And their confidential helpline is 01554-3811.
So a few weeks ago, Colm, we discussed that there was a plan to put shops and apartments in the GPO, the birthplace of revolutionary Ireland. Well, as if things couldn't get any more grim, plans for a new student accommodation facility with 957 bed spaces in Cork City have been put on hold in a former convent, orphanage and Magdalen laundry. So there has been four separate appeals against plan permission that would have seen 274 student apartments in the Good Shepherd Convent in Cork City. Now, can you imagine paying that amount of rent to have some questionable sex with questionable people in what is basically a fucking haunted house?
Yeah.
I am taken aback at the lack of interest in this country in keeping spaces that are not only historic, but also like darkly historic, the very worst of our country. And instead of taking that and turn it into something useful for the community, developers are given the go-ahead to turn these into rental mills where we just charge people who probably don't have the money in the first place to live there in cramped accommodation. So we've seen this in Sean McDermott Street Laundry in Dublin City. They wanted to put apartments in there. And thankfully, Dublin City Councillors and Mary Lou McDonald and Gary Gannon all got involved and said absolutely not. And the community said absolutely not. So what they're doing in Sean McDermott Street is a proposed museum and exhibition space. They'll have social housing, an early learning facility and educational facilities. If we have to use former Magdalen laundries and Muller and Baby Homes for housing, in no world should it be commercial housing.
Yeah.
It should be social housing for the good of the people of Ireland.
Because the land, it's available because of its dark history. So exactly. That's why they're able to take advantage of it. So they're effectively coining it because of the fact the place was abandoned because of the bad things that happened there. And what's more, that land quite likely came from the state originally.
Mm-hmm.
Like when all of the religious orders, you know, 19th, 20th century, they became important because the state, be it the British state or the early Irish state, abdicated its responsibility to look after vulnerable people. So often they were given land or given it at low rates of purchase. So they benefited. That's why religious orders have pots of money based on having pots of land. And so the land should go back.
And just to give context, the Justice for the Magdalens research have found at least 195 women and girls who died at the Good Shepherd Laundry. So this is some of the darkest parts of our history, and they're going to vulture it out to these funds to make student accommodation. And I agree, obviously, we need more student accommodation, especially in places like Galway and Cork. But this is not the way to do it. I think the only personal feeling I have about this is my granny was in Nazareth House in Derry as an orphan. And the thought that people would be living there and renting apartments kind of makes me sick. I feel that what my granny would want and all her women who were kept in these institutions would want is that it would be social housing for the poorest, because the people who were in the Magdalen Laundries and the orphans were the poorest in Ireland. And now the state should be looking after the poorest, and that's why these buildings should be put into social use.
And we make such a fuss if a place that James Joyce wrote a book, you know, in Usher's Quay, and we're like, oh God, he wrote a book there and it's an awful ruin. What a disgrace. Like, we do manage to summon up fuss about the past, but we're very selective in it. And we're quite happy to have tragedy and the crack side by side. If you're ever at a wedding in an old Irish castle that was the scene of a Cromwell massacre, you're there with your Prosecco reading plaques on the wall about how many people were piked, you know. So we're able to deal with the duality of dark and shade, but making loads of hedge fund level money off it is not the way. It is the example you chose there, Sean McDermott Street, you know, we can have both, maybe not as many units, but the housing crisis will not be solved by the difference between an awful commemoration of a Magdalen Laundry and a reasonably okay one.
Yeah, honestly, between the GPO now and the Magdalen Laundries, I would not be surprised if they suggested a Wellerspoons at Kilmainham Jail. Why not a McDonald's in the courtyard where they shot Connolly in the chair? I just don't understand why we can't use these awful places for good, for memory.
Oh, Grace, let me hold you.
Oh, Grace.
Let me hold your arms and eat this fish finger. We've done worse. We've done worse. We've Krispy Kreme in the old central bank.
That's right. Krispy Kreme in the old central bank. Right. So anyway, it's been put on hold now, which is good news. Happy to see it. Hopefully, like Sean McDermott Street, which people fought against, something better can be suggested. And hopefully we will never see a Wellerspoons in next to the chair that they shot Connolly. Okay, this is a story that actually started last Saturday evening. A man in his 40s was assaulted by a group of youths in Talla in the southwest of Dublin after falsely being accused of inappropriate behaviour. This is something that we've seen more often than not now, especially in Dublin. I have seen just anecdotally videos of men who are not white being accused of being inappropriate around children with no basis in fact, evidence or reality. This man was set upon by a group of people in which they basically battered him and stripped him. And thankfully, the woman of Talla, this woman intervened and basically saved this man's life for all intents and purposes. And it was roundly condemned by the people of Talla. And what we saw in the aftermath was members of the community, not just the Indian community, who are obviously at the forefront of this and sharing their experiences of racist hate, which they say has increased in the last few years, but also the ordinary people of Talla from all backgrounds coming out to say this cannot happen in our community. So the Labour TD for the area, Kieran Ahern, said he was proud to stand in solidarity with the members of the Indian community. He said that last weekend's assault was not an isolated incident, and it's important for us to come together and protect the dignity of that human being who was stripped naked and had to walk around the street. It certainly isn't an isolated incident, because so many migrant communities have been impacted by these violent teenage gangs. And I think we have seen that. I mean, a Croatian man was beaten to death a number of years ago because he wasn't speaking English. And I feel like we kind of all moved on from that a bit too quickly. There was a lot of hullabaloo when an American tourist was savagely attacked in Talbot Street. But these type of attacks on residents of Ireland are becoming so much more common. And it is not good enough to say, oh, well, it's these teenagers. There needs to be an active response to this now. people of all different ethnicities live in Ireland. They are Irish people. They are part of our communities. And I was quite upset even watching the RTÉ News at the vigil, because there was young Indian women and men saying, "I've been shoved in the street, I've been spat at, I've been shouted at." And those things don't make the news. And I don't want it to get to a point where someone who isn't white is basically murdered in the street because they don't appear to look like everyone else. I think sometimes Ireland rests on its laurels because our far right is so laughable at times, and because they get nowhere in elections, we think they're not here.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that the young people who did this are far right or even involved with a far right group, but this was a racist attack.
And that woman, I mean, who stood up for him, saved his life, just trying to place myself in her shoes, like, that's extremely scary, brave thing to do. For people who are not as brave as that, there are still things we can do. Now, if you go to spunout.ie, there's a page there on what to do if you see racism. They always say, you know, if you see someone targeted by racism, speak up if it feels safe for you. Because, you know, I'm sure everybody has at some point intervened and then just not been ready for the level of shit they might get. You know, the last time I intervened in, it was a car break-in, I got beaten up. So, like, so it's kind of like, as the bystander, you're not up to speed with the level of rage of what's going on. It's incredible how that woman was so brave. But there are things you can do. So if you feel it safe, you speak up. If you can at least maintain eye contact with the person who is being abused, you can speak to them without referencing the person who's giving them abuse. If possible, just ask them, are they okay? Or start conversing with them.
I think everyone likes to think that in that situation, they would do something.
Yeah.
But for most people, they don't. And
you
we see it. We see it on videos of the Lewis. We see it on trains. We see it on buses here and in London. I saw a Muslim woman being abused when I was on a tram in Melbourne. And I was the only person that spoke out. And I almost peed myself. I was so afraid. And I was very lucky in that instance that he didn't come for me as well. But the instance of a white person literally putting my body in front of this woman stopped it. And like, not everybody can do that. But there has to be a way of even just saying something.
Yeah.
And just reporting it.
Even in the aftermath, reaching out to them, asking if they're okay, reporting it, definitely just showing some sort of solidarity. Because your move of solidarity is going to encourage others. You're breaking some sort of spell. I mean, it's funny, like, I was on the Lewis once. This is a completely different scenario, but it just talks about what people are frozen in the bystander effect. And there was an old man got on. A lot of people were standing, I was standing, and there was a seat kind of a bit far away. He was never going to get to it. And just one person bellowed out, "Will you just get out of the way and let the old man sit down," right? Just, it doesn't sound like much.
Yeah.
But that speaking out in the public space doesn't come naturally, but making that first leap can make all the difference.
I'd just like to say that the woman who looked after the man said that the young people concocted a fake story about him being a paedophile who was found with his pants down in a playground to justify their attack. She said he was nowhere near that playground, that he was very nice, polite and gentle, and this was a narrative that they had spun so the community would turn a blind eye to a racially motivated attack. The man only arrived in Ireland a week ago. He has a wife and an 11-month-old baby back home in India. She said it was pure racism leading to innocent people being attacked. So fair play to this woman. She should get some sort of award for bravery. That man, I hope there's a GoFundMe for him somewhere, and we can only wish him the best. And if you are the type of person who justifies things like this, you are a complete dickhead.
Dude, we don't want them listening to our podcast. Stop, unsubscribe. Also, the battle is not just won on the streets around the Lewis. It's in your WhatsApp groups. It's in among your friends and family. There are people you love who are really nice people who might say some stupid, awful shit in the area of race. You know, start the process of telling them it's...
On a happier note, for Kerry people, Kerry won the All-Ireland.
Yeah,
I don't care anymore.
It's just absenting
itself.
You
don't carry anymore?
Yeah, I just, well, next year.
Tough time for Donegal, but you still have the hottest football manager in town, so that's something. But
Jimmy's winning hearts.
Jimmy's winning hearts. He's winning the mothers and the wives and the daughters. So Kerry won the All-Ireland on Sunday. Bad news for Kerry TD Danny Healy-Ray, who was shoved by a Garda On Sunday, there is video footage of the incident. Danny Healy-Ray was walking down the middle of a main road with his arms aloft like he was the king of Kerry himself, and a Garda walks past him and kind of shoulder bumps him and gives him a little shove out of the way. When Danny Healy-Ray turns on his heel and challenges the Garda say some things to his face and they both walk off. Now, Danny Healy-Ray seemed incredibly shocked to be treated this way by a Garda. As someone who lives in the inner city, I see young people in tracksuits treated like this every day.
Yeah. It's just very much a Garda who
has had enough, I think.
Well, he's not at All-Ireland final banter mode. Because basically, sports events Garda-ing involves, you know, good-humoured nudging rather than shoving, come on, out of the way there, kind of thing. And it went from there to the Savage Eye sketch of lose the attitude kind of thing. It's a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah. A TD was treated probably less than mannerly, but a lot of people have been treated a lot worse than the Yardie. And I think, you know, we will all move on from this.
Yeah.
I don't think the reputation of the Yardie is going to suffer very much from the shoving of a Healy-Ray. But we congratulate Kerry on their big one. I can't remember the score, but congrats to Kerry. Hard luck for Donegal. You didn't deserve to win it. But we're moving on now, Colm. More sport.
Yeah, so big news for sports involving modes of transport. Okay. Yeah. We had Ben Healy was the first Irish cyclist on the podium in a long while at the end of the Tour de France because he was the most combative rider, which means the rider takes the most risks, attacks the most, not the one who's handiest with his fists, not the one who might shoulder somebody on a street at Croke Park. So that's one thing, but it may have gone under the radar. We have a first ever Irish surfer to win a continental gold medal. Sligo surfer Garóid MacDade
coming the Northwest
from the European Surfing Championships in Portugal, helped his team to an overall third place finish. So yeah, it was Ireland's strongest result to date. Another bronze medal performance from Ruby Knox in the women's longboard as well too.
And yeah, MacDade is shortboard.
Yeah, and just for listeners, the difference between a longboard and a shortboard is primarily the length of the board. So just if you're in polite company and wondering what, you know, how to make small talk in this area, as somebody who can't swim to save his life. I can swim if I can touch the ground.
I don't think people who can't swim should be allowed to have wings.
Okay. Right. My children can swim better than I do. We're getting to the stage where they can help me. Sorry, you're just making me doubt myself and my abilities as a father there. I didn't come on here for this. The surfing guy won a European gold medal. Isn't that great? Do you surf yourself?
I don't. I'm incredibly clumsy in general, so I don't think surfing would be my forte. But the only time I have been anywhere near surfing was also in Sligo.
Yeah.
We used to go to my friend Caitlin's holiday home in Mullaghmore. Absolutely gorgeous part of the world. Lots of really good surfing up there.
This is generally around mid-July.
Yeah.
All your summer holidays. Why is that?
It's such a weird habit to just always disappear.
Mid to late July.
Yeah, or in the middle of July. But yeah, delighted for Garóid. He said that all the team supported each other the whole way through and that his team coach, Gavin McCrae, spent hours and hours on the beach every day helping him train.
And just looking at he got 8.83 points.
I presume that's good.
Do you get more points if you're good?
I'm enjoying this like new wave of us being good at obscure sports. Like, do you remember years ago when the hockey team got to the final?
Yeah.
And everyone decided that we were mad into hockey and they had a homecoming and all for them even though they lost.
Yeah.
Really want to get into that. Like maybe like, I don't know, curling or lacrosse could be next.
A fella I used to know once set up the Irish Curling Society. Like we don't have the gear. Like we have a floor and a brush kind of thing. But it was his way.
He's actually just a janitor.
Yeah. He's doing that. That very quick sweeping it up after a heavy night brushing. I don't know how far he got, but that was his plan to get into the Olympics because obviously, look, Ireland won medals in the Olympics for painting.
Painting?
Yeah, in the early 20th century, I think Jack B. Yeats won an Olympic medal for painting. The Olympics, because when it came out first, it was all about life in general.
Like, oh, okay.
In the immediate, the first few Olympics, as we'd say here.
What were they like as a spectator?
I believe it was like watching paint dry. Yeah. Sorry, that's the joke.
So on that note, watching paint dry, me and Colm are doing a live show at All Together Now on Friday at 6 o'clock. Our special guest is...
Eric Lawler, comedian.
One of Colm's mates.
Yes, yeah.
Eric Lawler, the very talented comedian, is going to be our special guest. So we're going to do some news and then we're going to do some games. And
the games are just very simple. They're not like role-playing games, right?
No, it's not like us playing Cluedo on the stage. It's going to be news-related games and we will need an audience for audience participation. So that means you guys have to attend. So it's 6 o'clock on Friday.
I believe Friday is going to be kind of wet as well too. So you're going to want to get shelter. And this is a tent, isn't it?
Yes.
We are going to be indoors. So
the headliner for the Friday night is Fontaine's Take Back Everything I Said About Bows. And please come and see A Few Scoops live at 6 o'clock at the Go Loud Lounge at All Together Now this weekend. Please come. We are both absolutely terrified. No one's going to show up. So we would love to see you there.
Yeah, you see, that's not the spirit. We need to be brasher than that. I would say get there early in case you can't get into it.
Yeah, first come, first serve, folks. And our other good news this week is, hi guys, my good news is that my dad finally had back surgery he's been waiting months for. They took out part of his vertebrae. I didn't even know you could live without part of your vertebrae. And now he's back home and his pain is already so much better. I mean, considering the way waiting lists are in this country, I'm just glad to hear anyone get an operation.
Yeah, I mean, he was originally supposed to go into Crumlin at the Children's Hospital, but finally got there.
He's had a few kids now. For the rest of your good news, please send it in to afewscoops@goloudnow.com. And as usual, we would like to thank our amazing producer, Siobhan Walsh, who puts up with me and Colm every week.
And she has other shows to produce, so we're just one of her children. And she doesn't make it feel that way at all.
Like, no,
we're
she's not like bothering Mary her. Poppins of A Few Scoops. So that's us for this week. Hopefully we'll see you on Friday. Colm, anything you would like to add?
Nothing to add. I'm going to Little Shop of Horrors tonight.
Oh, nice.
I'm not a musical person, but, you know, something about free tickets make me a musical person. looking forward to All Together Now. We'll be all sitting back, all relaxed on couches. That's where we'll say something that gets us into trouble. It's usually at music festivals.
We get cancelled.
You know, we're so careful. You know, we're defamation and everything. And just at a musical festival, we'll say the one thing that brings this whole thing crashing down.
Some people say we're the kneecap of podcasts. Goodbye.